Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Shop Amazon for last minute gifts. Great deals for everyone on your list. Gifts for mom and gifts for dad. Even for your sister and your brother, Chad. Ah, shoot, we didn't realize we were supposed to get a gift for our dog walker guy. We almost forgot about our dentist, Dr. Kerr. We didn't expect to get a gift from her. Or our cousin, I forget his name. He got us something nice, better reciprocate. For last minute deals on gifts for people you forgot, get fast and free shipping at Amazon.
Blackbusters.
What's cracking, family? It's your boy Big Job Man, and we here with another episode of Blackbusters, the best movie review podcast in the world.
In the world, Craig.
Man. Hey, man, like I said, I'm Big Job Man, along with my co-host.
Hot take tone today.
Hot take tone. Oh, yeah. Shit.
No other like aliases.
No, this straight to the point.
Hot take tone.
It's a hot take tone today.
Yes.
Hey, so y'all know when tone is hot taking.
Mm-hmm.
His takes be steaming hot, bro.
We got some real questions to answer here, Ja.
Like,
some
hot,
real
man.
Questions to answer
man.
About this film, about other movies like it.
Okay.
I got a lot of questions. I got a lot
I
of
feel
takes.
Like this is a genre, a subgenre that people don't talk about.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Okay, family. We getting straight to it, man. We talking about Nothing to Lose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Nothing to Lose. Starring Martin Lawrence and Tim Robbins.
Good pairing.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Before this movie, the movie came out in 97.
Mm-hmm.
Before this movie, would you have thought that Martin Lawrence and Tim Robbins would do a film together?
Nah.
Like this.
Not like
low
this.
Low-key, buddy, like a buddy film.
Definitely a buddy
yeah,
film.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, not even low-key,
mm-hmm.
High-key.
Yeah.
Martin Lawrence plays Terrence Paul Davidson. Tim Robbins plays Nick Beam. Tim Robbins is this big, high executive marketing guy.
97 marketing guy.
97. Picture this, like, he does marketing for big-time commercials and magazines and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He makes good paper.
Yeah.
Right? And he's, like, top of the food chain. He might have one boss.
But his boss is a real dick.
Yeah. A douchebag type
douchebaggy
dude.
Douchebaggy kind of boss.
A goober bag type guy. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Means well, but he's still kind of, like, weirdo.
Yeah.
You know
like the 90s used to have the asshole boss.
Yeah.
Either like male or female. The kind of like you never see portrayed today. Like HR, lawsuits.
Yeah.
We're very litigious society now. But back then it could be super douchey.
They leave you, you're about to leave a work to go home and he'll pull up and throw a stack of papers on you. Overtime tonight.
Yeah.
I need these on my desk by tomorrow morning.
I need it
morning.
In the morning.
Yeah. What are you talking about? It's a weekend. Yeah. Yeah. You got to have to work all through the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
He's that type of guy.
That type of guy. But like with like a, like throw the work at you, and but then give you like, thank God for you in the team, right?
You know what, team player, you.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm going to ski.
That guy.
Right.
Yeah, I'm going to Aspen, so this weekend you need to take my load.
Right,
pause.
Right.
Yeah, man. I had to throw that in there real quick. Also, you got John C. McNeely. He plays Davis Rigg Lanlow and Giancarlo Esposito.
Yeah.
Man, Charlie Dunn.
Always
Giancarlo,
shining.
Bro, has there ever been a bad role?
I don't think I've ever seen him play a bad, and we've seen him play
do everything,
so many different types of characters.
Extremely. I want to say he's underrated, but I see him. He's been working for 40 years.
I mean,
maybe 30 to 40 years.
He's so good, he could still be underrated.
Yeah,
because people don't always bring him up when they talk about some of the great actors, right? Like, you know, Denzel and, you know,
Lawrence Fishburne, Tom Cruise. And
this man been working with different characters.
Yes.
From like Gus Fring Breaking Bad. He's played gangsters. Businessmen.
Business dudes.
He's played, you know, Islanders.
Corporate, everything.
Caribbean.
Yeah, man. Yeah. He does everything, man. Shout out to brother Esposito.
Mm-hmm.
He plays a villain in this film. So I was saying, I'm not going to give you the whole movie, mm-hmm. but I'll just break it down to like Tim Robbins' character. He's like a high exec that has to, he goes home early to surprise his wife.
Yeah.
They're going on some date. Right?
He's supposed to, the boss hits him with the, I need you to stay late.
Yeah.
So he thinks he has to stay late.
Right.
But the dinner cancels,
right?
And he gets to go home early. Flowers and the whole night.
They about to have a good weekend, mm-hmm. man. I'm about to go home, surprise my lady. I'm home early.
Yep.
Let's go get dinner. Come back and you know, do the thing. He gets to the house early and he hears some moaning from upstairs, and he goes upstairs and sees her and peeks through the bedroom door,
mm-hmm.
and sees his wife riding pipe.
Riding it well, man.
Yeah, man. She was doing her thing. It was crucial, riding bro. Well. And him being the buster that he is,
mm-hmm.
he just sat there and watched for a little bit and walked away stunned.
Yeah.
And then he saw some cufflinks on the counter.
Oh.
You know, when you about to get a crack, you start taking off your clothes mm-hmm. and stuff. So this is a mm-hmm. businessman. He had cufflinks on. And the cufflinks say PB on the cufflinks.
Matching the initials of his boss.
And his boss, his initials are PB. His yep. nickname is PB.
Yep.
And so he's like, damn, my wife is cheating on me with my boss. The guy that just told me to work late.
Mm-hmm.
This nigga knows my family.
Yeah.
He's a friend of the family. And he's smashing my wife and my wife letting him.
Yeah.
And so now he's heartbroken. He's shocked. He's kind of, he don't even know what to do.
Man.
He starts driving in traffic at 30 miles an hour.
Just in a daze.
On the freeway.
Just in a daze.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Have y'all ever seen this movie called Falling Down?
Reminds me a lot of Falling
yeah,
Down.
Yeah, yeah, Michael Douglas, yes.
A great movie.
Yeah. It's not a blockbuster, but it's a great film.
Mm-hmm.
But it's basically about a man, in this case, Tim Robbins, his whole life is over now.
Yeah.
You know, his the love of his life is cheating on him, and he's heartbroken, and he just don't know what to do.
And I mean, he's got beautiful home.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like yeah. for the 90s, he had a nice whip for 97.
He had a Suburban?
It's like a GMC or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, but a nice whip for 97. Yeah,
a big truck.
Yeah. Job, you know,
uh-huh.
everything. But
he had the little lady, the receptionist, the little that worked at the flower shop,
mm-hmm.
baddie. Is that the
Noxzema girl?
The Noxzema girl, I forget her name. Yeah. She's in here.
Rebecca Gayhart.
Yeah, Rebecca Gayhart played Danielle.
Memorized.
You remember her name.
She is on my white girl Mount Rushmore.
Okay.
For the 90s.
As she should be. Like Topanga's on mine. You know what I'm saying?
Topanga's a good one.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? But Rebecca Gayhart plays Danielle, and she works downstairs in the lobby of the big corporate building
mm-hmm.
that Tim Robbins is part of, and she sells flowers.
Yeah.
She's like a florist.
Yeah.
So, and she flirts with him every chance mm-hmm. she gets, she's like on him. So he's like a dude, young, older guy, probably like in his late 30s, early 40s.
Late 30s, early 40s.
Young chicks in their 20s is after mm-hmm. him. He's making paper. He's driving a big truck. Yeah.
And he's not flashy.
He's
a like a kind of just a regular Joe.
Living his best life.
Yeah, you know, his coworkers like him.
Mm-hmm.
He's a nice guy.
Even when you present to him and it's not a good presentation, he'll let you down easy.
Yeah, he's just a good dude. Just a good dude.
Yeah. A square bear, nice guy.
Perfect.
You know what I'm saying?
Perfect.
He can do no wrong at this point. He finds out his wife's cheating on him, and he goes off into traffic, and he's just driving crazy. He's just driving. He doesn't even have a destination. He's just driving. So one day he pulls up to one, not one, not one day, but he pulls up into a red light, and mm-hmm. then in comes out the blue, opens the door, and jumps in the car. Martin Lawrence's character, Terrence Paul Davidson,
yep.
with a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Puts a gun to his head and says, bro, it's a stick up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Give me all your cash, bitch. You know what I'm saying? And so at this point, Tim Robbins, I like I said, his life is over at this point.
He literally has nothing to lose.
Nothing to lose, hence the title.
Yep.
He doesn't care about life right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's too upset about what's going on in his life right now to even be scared.
Yeah.
So he smashes on the gas. And start driving crazy.
nuts.
Yeah, it's probably going like 85 in the 45 zone, probably going 100, 108.
Yep.
In the on the freeway. And yep. Martin Lawrence is like crazy. He's scared. They're like, slow down, nigga.
This is good work by Martin, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. You know, they do a good job of establishing that Martin isn't a very good
criminal. A jacker.
Yeah. He's not very good at it.
Mm-hmm.
By the fact of how things, you know, how handle it. Tim Robbins' character don't give a fuck. He throws his wallet out the window.
Give me a wallet. He takes his wallet. Mm-hmm. He's so upset about life. When Martin says, give me a wallet, he takes his wallet and throws it out the window.
Yeah.
And his cell phone.
Yeah.
Just
done.
Yeah.
And they push all the way to Arizona.
From L.A. From Los Angeles.
Yeah.
He's driving crazy. He's driving so fast that there's no time to hop out the car and vacate or retreat. So Martin Lawrence is basically held hostage.
Yeah, they stuck.
He's stuck in the car together.
They stuck.
Hey, man, slow down. He's just driving down the highway, probably down the 10.
Yeah.
The 10 freeway, just smashing.
Stuck.
And so I think he finally has to get gas.
Do they have to get gas or does he just run out of, like, whatever was in his spirit?
To keep driving?
Just ran out.
Uh-huh.
And they maybe end up at the diner.
Yeah.
And, you know, but I like the way it opens, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the diner scene is great because they end up at the diner, you know, they order some food. By this time, they have rapport, oddly enough.
At this time, Martin is trapped.
Yeah.
He's in a whole nother state with this random dude that he tried to jack. And now Tim is still in shock. He's still like, I don't give a damn about nothing.
Yeah.
And Martin Lawrence's character hadn't shot him yet, so he knows, okay, this guy's not going to shoot me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just here.
Yeah.
So they end up fighting. They fought before the diner, right?
They fought in the car.
Yeah.
I want to say that they fought in the car. They fought outside the truck.
Yeah.
And then I think
that's when Tim Robbins hit him with the
yeah.
You know, the wrestling move, the elbow. It worked too, though. It fucked him up.
Then they went inside the diner where they sat and had like breakfast or lunch.
And that's when they kind of got to know each other.
Yeah.
So he's basically judging them. Tim Robbins' character, I don't know why they're sitting at this point, obviously it's a movie, but
they
just spent 4 hours driving together. They at least sit down and have lunch or breakfast or whatever it is. And this dude is pissed off. Tim Robbins is like, you are disgraced to the human race. You're a robber.
Yep, parasite.
And, yeah, parasite.
Oh, 9.
And of course, Martin Lawrence is he's like, man, you don't judge me. You don't know me. You don't know what I've been through in my life. Oh, how bad is it? Because you from the hood or something? And Tim Robbins has his own perspective of who Martin is, and Martin has his own perspective of who Tim is. Tim is a white guy with a nice suit, leisure suit, nice big truck. Yep. Oh, you probably working downtown L.A. and making good paper.
Yep.
You don't know my life.
So judging each other right off the bat.
Yeah, judging each other right off the bat. And they start to learn about each other, basically.
Tim Robbins explains why they are where they are. Mm-hmm. You know, explains what happened. You know, went home and such and such and such. Martin gives a great speech of like in classic Martin about what he would have said and da da da. And that for some reason like just triggers Tim Robbins again and they get to scrap it again.
So it's showing you that this dude, Tim Robbins, who typically would be like, he's from the suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably afraid of, if he don't have black friends, he probably got one black friend,
yes,
a token black guy in his crew. And it's probably one of them, like, you know, Tom dudes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So he would normally be scared of like someone like Martin, but he's so fed up about life right now that he's angry. He's so angry that he's getting back at Martin. They fight and he's punching them in the face and all that.
And at this point, they kind of need each other because Tim Robbins doesn't have his wallet, so he doesn't have any cash.
Right.
Right. Like, you know, Martin's got a little bit of cash to pay for.
Right.
So it's almost kind of like they're just kind of like bonded until they can get back to L.A.
Yeah.
This brings my first hot take regarding this movie.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure this is a blackbuster.
Okay. Here's the thing. I like that he said that because I thought about this too. It's a blackbuster. Let me tell you why.
Okay. You make your case for, I'll make the case against.
If you listen to the music,
mm-hmm,
it's black music.
Yeah.
hip hop from the beginning to the end.
Mm-hmm.
And there's blues in there. There's some oldies in there. Mm-hmm. And it's black. The soundtrack is black.
Yeah.
It's a black film. And Martin, I know Tim Robbins is white, right? I know it was written by a white guy. Speaking of the guy, it was written by Steve Odekirk.
Mm-hmm.
Written and directed by Steve Odekirk. And I get why you say it might not be a blockbuster, but I believe it is mm-hmm. because Martin's so black.
And this goes back to
he's so black.
When we were first thinking about this podcast, when we were, you know, mm-hmm. starting and talking about it, and we were trying to like figure out the criteria. What's the criteria for, you know, a blockbuster? And we kind of, you know, remember we were like, well, is this movie a blockbuster or is this movie a blockbuster? So in this one, you got Martin who is doing all the classic Martin stuff, mm-hmm. right? Fantastic performance by Martin from end to end. He's really good at this.
Mm-hmm.
And even like in some cases has dialed it back from yeah. like the true Martin. He mm-hmm. does a lot of like really good subtle shit here.
Right.
But this movie is about a white guy. It's about a white guy's life, a white guy's marriage, a white guy's job, a white guy's boss, a white guy who kind of collides with this black guy. But ultimately, everything kind of circles around this white man and what's going on with his life. Things resolve for the white man, and then at the end, he kind of like shows up and he's kind of formed this bond and kinship with the black guy. So I was asking myself, in a film that's not centered on blackness, even though it has a black co-star, might have some black music, but it's fundamentally set in the white world, can that still be a blockbuster? What's interesting, I'll give you a contrast. So we did Money Talks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Money Talks is blacker than Nothing to Lose, mm-hmm. if that makes sense, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, and so—
A little bit more.
A little bit more, right? Like, you know, but it's still the same kind of thing, right? Like, you know, I think you could probably argue that Money Talks is about Chris Tucker's character.
Mm.
You know, as the key character and Charlie Sheen and what's kind of popping with him as the side piece. But it's interesting because, like, if Nothing to Lose isn't a blockbuster, then can Money Talks be a blockbuster?
Right. And this is why I put Nothing to Lose in there as a blockbuster because of Money Talks
mm-hmm.
and because of 48 Hours.
So you think 48 Hours is a blockbuster?
Here's the thing. I feel like these two, I feel like the actors in it, Eddie Murphy is the epitome of black. So when mm-hmm. you put Eddie Murphy in the movie,
so just it's automatically a blockbuster.
So that's why you put Eddie Murphy in the film. You yeah. can have Eddie Murphy could be the only white person in the film, the only black person in the film, but the black people are going to go see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Martin, black people are going to go see it.
Yeah.
You know, I think they purposely made those type of movies to get both races together.
Yeah.
You know, 48 Hours, another 48 Hours, Beverly Hills Cop, mm-hmm. black guy with the like a buddy cop film with black yeah. guy and the white boys. And same thing here. Money Talks, black guy, white. So we got to get a black guy in there.
Mm-hmm.
Money, here's the thing. If Rush Hour was...
Rush Hour is a great question.
Yeah. We haven't done that yet, yeah. but we will.
Because here's like what I was thinking to piggyback off what you're saying. I think what you're saying is absolutely right. And I think it's a good criteria for like what makes something a blockbuster. What I was like flirting with was that let's just say it's one black character in a movie surrounded by like others.
Mm-hmm.
As long as the story is about the black guy or the black woman, then that makes it a blockbuster. But if the story is about somebody else fundamentally, does the sheer presence of that black character mm-hmm. make it a blockbuster, right? So I'll give you a couple of examples. Beverly Hills Cop is the story of Axel Foley. The movie is about Axel's story.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that makes it a blockbuster. I think 48 Hours is about Eddie Ray. I think it's about Eddie Murphy. Not like Nick Nolte is the cop, but Eddie Murphy is the key component. Mm-hmm. Like he knows the guys, he's out, da 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 da. I think it's an Eddie Murphy movie, kind of like maybe hybrid little gray area, Trading Places. is not really, but Eddie Murphy kind of steals the show. So you have all of these different examples, like Money Talks, right? I think Money Talks, I think the story is about Chris Tucker. In Nothing to Lose, I feel like the story is about Tim Robbins. Martin is there, and he's awesome, but is that enough to make Nothing to Lose a blockbuster?
I think so.
I think, like you get,
I get what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I just feel like Money Talks and Nothing to Lose are in the same lane.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've seen Chris Tucker's family, not family, we see his wife.
Mm-hmm.
We go to his house. And
Martin's family.
No,
in both movies.
Remember Money Talks? Yeah. He goes to the hood to see his homeboy, his partner, mm-hmm. and he gets the guns from his homeboys and his and he goes back to his house.
Yeah.
What other hood spots outside of the car wash?
Mm-hmm.
It's three locations.
Yeah.
But outside of that, he's at the mansion,
mm-hmm.
he's at the auction. You know what I'm saying?
Same with Nothing to Lose.
Right. So yeah. That's my point. We see his family, we see his kids. And I get what you're saying because it starts off with Tim Robbins' character, but I mm-hmm. think it's about both of them, both their families. Hence it ends with the Black family.
I think the fact that like the scenes that we get when Tim Robbins is back at Martin's house with his family. Because all of that is so good, it's really good. Like, Martin is really good with his kids, and you get to see this softer side of him, and he's really good with his wife, and, you know, grandma slapping the shit out of everybody.
That's Black
stuff. Which was hella Black.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Robbins discovering that, like, he's got certificates in, you know, computer engineering mm-hmm. and da-da-da-da-da. Yeah. And he realizes he's kind of judged this guy the whole way. But I still feel like even through that, we're looking at this movie, we're looking at everything through the eyes of a white man, right? Like, you know, like this movie is through the eyes of a white man. So it's like, well, shit, if this is a blockbuster, then Glory is a blockbuster, right? Like, you know, because, I mean, think about it. You got Denzel, you got Morgan Freeman, right? Like, you know, you got Andre Braun, you got all of these, you know, they're talking about Black people mm-hmm. stuff. Like, it's the Civil War, it's the all-Black regimen, right? Like, even though it's told through Colonel Shaw's perspective, Glory would, under this criteria, qualify. Now, what's the big X factor is Rush Hour, right?
Uh-huh.
Because Rush Hour the movie's about Jackie Chan. Jackie Chan's, you know, fight to get the girl back and how he partners with Chris Tucker. Chris Tucker is just so amazing, you know what I mean, that, like, he kind of steals the show. But this movie is not about Black people. It's about Asian people, an Asian cop specifically, you know, fighting to, like, get the unkidnapped. So does that make it a blockbuster movie? Just simply having the Black actor given an outstanding performance in a supporting role in a movie that isn't centered on Blackness, does that mean that that's a blockbuster?
I get your question, man.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I feel like that might be an answer that can be successfully answered.
It might be case by case basis.
Yeah, because I'm thinking about if that's the, like, Money Talks, the objective was. It was, there was a prison break,
mm-hmm.
a jail break
yeah.
that Chris Tucker was involved in, mm-hmm. his character. And that wasn't, he was just, that was on some, the guy was a Russian or French, right?
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Some sort of, you know.
So he got caught up in that.
Classic 90s.
And so now the police are after these two people, like,
mm-hmm.
it's not a Black film either, outside of him going, showing where he's from. Showing right. his neighborhood briefly, mm-hmm. but I feel like it's just, I feel like Tim Robbins, Jackie Chan,
mm-hmm.
and Charlie Sheen are in the movie.
Yeah.
Let's make it Black by putting Martin, Chris mm-hmm. Tucker in it. You know what I'm saying? I feel like if it was Jackie Chan and what's his name? Luke Wilson, mm-hmm. or Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
It's still funny. It probably do big too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But it's not nowhere near a black film. Right. You wouldn't even consider it. But like I feel like those particular actors are so black.
That's the point. I think when the actor brings the culture with them.
Yes.
In the way that like Chris Tucker and Martin Lawrence did. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is that as we continue down the Martin kind of path, a lot of these to me start to become like coin flips on like we'll have this conversation again, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when we get to Blue Streak, for example, right? If the same questions will present themselves, except in this particular case, the movie is all about Martin Lawrence, right? Mm-hmm. He's the star.
But here's the thing. Mm-hmm. Don't it feel the same?
They feel the same.
Yeah.
I mean, like I have to watch it again. I haven't seen Blue Streak in years.
Mm-hmm. We'll do that soon.
But like a lot of like, if you start looking at a lot of the movies Martin starts to do, they all start to feel a little like Nothing to Lose. Right? Like they're all that type of movie. Aside from Life and of course the Bad Boys franchises, was there anything that Martin did that was, and I'm talking about like star power, not talking about A Thin Line. I'm not talking like those movies are established, but like all of these movies kind of come after A Thin Line.
Right.
Right? Like, you know, the buddy comedies that he started doing
more Hollywood stuff. The
Black Knight, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know, so we got Welcome Home, Roscoe Jenkins.
Boom.
That's a black movie for sure. So yeah, so I think he starts to bounce back and forth. But he's got an interesting career.
I think that's very similar of most black. You know what I'm saying? Like Chris Tucker went from Friday to Fifth Element.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Outside of Dead Presidents and Friday, Money Talks closest. You know what I'm saying? Money Talks is right around that coin flip era.
Yeah.
But yeah, he did the Fifth Element, Rush Hour 1, 2, 3. Mm-hmm. Like those are when you get to Hollywood, that's you're doing those big type of films.
Once you cross over like that.
Yeah. Where the kind of film you're in is that could easily have been the white guy.
100%.
Terrence T in Nothing to Lose could be Owen Wilson.
100%.
Or, you know what I'm saying?
Early Mark Wahlberg.
Yes. You know what I'm saying?
Like.
Right. So that's what I mean. Same thing with Rush Hour. Rush Hour could have been Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Perfect.
You know what I mean? So.
Perfect.
I feel like most black actors eventually go from doing movies like The Fridays and doing movies like House Party to like. Getting and being doing buddy cop films with
yeah,
you know what I'm saying, with a white guy or an Asian guy.
Chris Rock had a similar arc.
Yeah, Bad right? Company. Like, he went from
he started doing, you know, very black Pootie Tang, right?
Pootie Tang.
Very black movies to you know, that type of was Beverly Hill Ninja, was that him? No. You know the one I'm talking about.
With Chris Rock?
Chris Rock, where he like changes, it was like one of those switcheroo type of things.
Bad Company? Well, Anthony Hopkins?
Not with Anthony Hopkins. It's like it was a comedy where he goes to heaven or somebody comes back as a black. I'll look it up.
Yeah, yeah,
but it's familiar, right?
I get what you're saying. Yeah.
But like, so like.
I can't think of it right now.
But all of those like kind of like comedy stars had the same kind of arc. Mm-hmm. And so like, we've got.
Kevin Hart went from Paper Soldiers.
Kevin Hart's another example.
So, yeah.
Kevin, this is such a.
Next Friday to All About the Benjamins.
This is a hot take. Cause like
we got Boys in the Hood, Higher Learning, Friday to Ice Cube doing like Triple X, All About the. You know what I'm saying? So like, eventually, you're gonna go kind of like coin flippish.
Because about half of, we really got to write this shit down. Because about half of Kevin Hart's movies to me aren't blackbusters.
Oof.
About half.
Okay.
Like the ride along that he did with.
Yeah, it has to.
That has to be. Leads. I mean, it's him as Q, but like none of the stuff that he did with The Rock feels like a blackbuster.
Jumanji for sure ain't.
Jumanji for sure isn't. Nah. And then he did one where The Rock is like a secret agent.
Some central intelligence.
Yeah, but that's not a blackbuster.
Even though they both black.
Even though they both black.
Ah!
That's not a blackbuster, right?
Nah.
So like, yeah.
But. I would have loved to say if it was The Rock and Martin Lawrence,
mm-hmm.
or The Rock and Eddie Murphy and rocking Mike Epps.
So what does that say about Kevin Hart?
Kevin Hart is black. He's a nigga for sure. Yeah, but
in his movies.
The shit he did with Wesley Snipes, that showed me that he can still do, he's still him.
Yeah.
But his movies, his blackness is kind of like watered down.
He just like, Kevin Hart's about that bread.
Yeah.
Right? We're not disparaging
him. I'm not mad at him.
But from a movie standpoint, he goes for big buster crossover type films. Because I think in a way, the era that we're talking about with these 90s movies is over.
Yeah, unfortunately.
It doesn't exist. Like, you can't, like, all that's left is the type of stuff that, like, Kevin Hart does.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Or Tyler.
Or, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's all that's left, right? Because this movie doesn't get made, which goes to my second.
To your second take?
Hot take. Which is, why aren't these movies, when you think about it.
Oh, man.
When you think about it. All of, like, damn near all of the movies that we've covered on Blackbusters, I watched on DVD the first time I saw it, right?
Yeah.
Damn near all of them. There's a handful that I saw in the theater when they came out.
Oh, really?
Just a handful, right? Like, okay. I saw Boys in the Hood in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
Menace I saw on DVD first.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't see it in the theater. Woo, DVD.
Uh-huh.
You know, Juice DVD.
Oh shit.
You know, damn it, like a lot of this.
But is that you know what?
Part of it is age when
out. Me too, honestly, because I you're saying that because of the age.
Because
not
age.
Because of like the lack of like star power of the movie.
No.
Okay, good. I'm same here. My mom wouldn't let me go see Boys in the Hood.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I think the first time I started going to the movies by myself, there was a discount like theater in Pasadena. I saw the 5 Heartbeats like maybe 25 times, like at that theater, because you could literally catch the bus and just chill. And I would just hop from the theater that was playing 5 Heartbeats to the one that was playing Home Alone. And I literally would bounce back and forth. But I think the first movie I remember going to see like by myself was like Bad Boys.
That's funny.
Right? Like, you know.
What year is that? 95?
That was like 96.
My first movie, I remember it felt weird because my dad was dropping me off with my partner, my boy Will Moreland. Shout out to my boy, my nigga. Baby. Inside joke. The homie Will Moreland, man, he dropped us off. We was in the 10th grade. They see Don't Be a Menace while drinking the gin and juice in the hood.
Yeah.
He dropped us off at the movies theater. I think he had to pay for our tickets.
Mm-hmm.
It was like PG-17 or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, that one had to be R.
Yeah. Might have been. It was smashing in the credits, opening credits.
Yeah.
My dad was a real one. He paid for our tickets and then he got in his car and drove off. I'll see y'all in 2 hours.
Yeah.
And since then I started going to the movies by myself without my parents.
My aunt took me to see, my aunt was probably why I have like all of this like cinephile like blood in me, because she took, like, I saw Last Dragon in the theater.
Okay.
Like at the Egyptian in Hollywood, right? Like I saw Lean On Me at Man Chinese, right?
So like, we gotta do Lean On Me soon.
Whenever something black came out, she would take me to see. So I saw a lot of that stuff there. But I think that Hollywood made all of these movies. This is my theory, and you told me if you agree. Hollywood was making all of these movies, giving these opportunities to Martin Lawrence and Chris Tucker for these very like studio, you know, very film school, you know, very simple plotted films, because they knew that they would make their money, if not on the box office, they'd make it in rentals and DVD sales.
Right.
Right. So all of these movies were profitable.
Right.
By Hollywood standards, which is why we got so many of them. Once the DVD market fell off, the studios stopped greenlighting these type of films, because there was no guarantee that they were going to make their money back.
That might be right, bro.
Right?
And
I think the consequence of that is this whole new crop of very funny people who I think are just as creative as, like, I think that there should, if Hollywood had stayed the same, there'd be an army of, like, DJ Pooh acolytes that all get to have movies greenlit and made in Hollywood, right?
Right.
But because Hollywood stopped greenlighting these films, talented directors and actors like yourself and others that have been on this show, the there's no platform there.
Right.
Right? So yeah. Then it goes to what you know what you and others have done, which is evolved into what we see on the net. But what's missing is that galvanizing glue.
Yeah.
That we all had, like, you know, because mm-hmm. we've all remember seeing these movies, and it's the commonality around these movies that put them in the esteem that mm-hmm. they are now.
Yeah.
That's my theory, that like once these movies, like I remember seeing Nothing to Lose and damn near everybody's DVD case. Remember mm-hmm. you going up somebody's crib, yeah. somebody's living room, and be their DVD case. Oh, yeah. I remember seeing this everywhere.
You go through the whole little mm-hmm. the alphabetical order. If you was really, yep. you had a gang of them.
Yep.
Yeah. Or the book, mm-hmm. the booklet, the big ass folder, mm-hmm. the album.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all that, man.
So like when that went away, I think Hollywood stopped making these movies.
Because of DVD sales, because they stopped really doing the DVD thing.
Once we went to streaming, like I remember, like if you go back to this era, there are some times where I would buy a DVD for a movie that I had never even seen.
Mm-hmm.
I just knew that Chris Tucker was in it.
Right.
Or Martin was in it.
Yeah.
So I'd spend the $15.99 mm-hmm. or whatever to buy the DVD.
Yeah.
There were a lot of people that went and saw the movie in theater and mm-hmm. then purchased the DVD. Because that was the only way to watch it again. If you ever wanted to watch it again.
Right. Right? Or wait for it to come on HBO or wait for it to come on BET with the right. with the bad dub.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So because the resale market dropped out, this is like the last kind of like the last graduating class of
so
of, it of sounds movie like, stars.
Yeah, movie stars. So now it's gonna go back. Now I feel like it's going to like they're having dope ass movies on streaming platforms.
Mm-hmm.
So things that go straight to HBO or Max,
yeah,
or Netflix or Amazon Prime and Paramount, mm-hmm. so they'll start coming out like that, and then the theaters. I mean,
I still go to the theater
for sure.
Yeah.
All the time, me and the missus. But it's never packed unless it's like a
Marvel movie,
a Marvel film.
Yeah, something huge.
It might be packed for like that day or that weekend.
And those are the only movies they kind of make now,
right?
They only make things
they don't make movies like Nothing to Lose. When's the last time you seen something like this?
That's what I'm saying. Like, when I was thinking about this movie job, I was thinking, like, okay, you've got this class of performers.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Tucker, Martin, Chris Rock, right? And then, like, it goes cold. And I'm, like, looking for, like, where it picks back up, where, like, Black comedians that make the jump into movie stars. And I feel like there's this gap of I don't know who came after them.
Yes, so that's a question. That's a good question. Cause my age, I'm 40. I'm 41, mm-hmm. sorry. Mm-hmm. 41, man. And I feel like I started doing comedy when I was late 20s. So mm-hmm. I was about 27,
mm-hmm.
28. And I also was an actor too.
Yeah.
I got an agent in 09. And it's just that I have to ask myself, who are the, and all the Martins are 50 something mm-hmm. now. The Chris Tucker, I'm assuming he's damn near 50 as well, if mm-hmm. not 48, 49, 50.
Yeah.
And he's Tommy Davidson, the Jamie Foxx's, they're 50.
Yes.
So who are, but when he made Booty Call, when they made Friday, they mm-hmm. were in their 20s.
Yes.
Their early 20s.
Yes.
So who are the guys now, and me being a comedian, me knowing a lot of Black comedians around L.A.
Mm-hmm.
and even outside of L.A., just in general, just having a knowledge of all these comedians out there,
mm-hmm.
where's the generational talent? Now, I see a lot of stand-up comics I think are funny as hell.
Amazingly funny.
You know what I'm saying? But
amazingly
but
funny.
Movie stars.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
See, and that's what I'm saying.
Like, I don't know.
Like, to me, like, and again, like, I say this from a bigger picture standpoint, right? You know the respect and mm-hmm. admiration that I have for you.
Appreciate it.
Like, you should be a movie star. Mm-hmm. Tony Baker should be a movie star. Yeah. Kev on Stage should be a movie star, mm-hmm. right? Like these are the guys that I find to be the funniest, right? But you're right. Like, as I start going down, like, okay, it was a homeboy brother used to hang out with did a lot of those off-brand comedies, 40-year-old Virgin, Craig,
oh, yeah.
Craig Robinson.
Yes.
Craig Robinson.
Yes.
So he made the jump, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hannibal Buress did some stuff, right?
But yeah, I would say Hannibal, I loved him as a comic. Not mm-hmm. loved, I still love him as a comic.
Yeah.
I wouldn't consider him an actor like that to where...
But he's done movies. Like, you see him in stuff every now and then. But there should be a whole... There should be a whole roster of like 30-year-old and 40-year-old comics that are making movies that I just don't see it happening.
There should be a comedian that is the age of Michael B. Jordan.
Yes.
That's a star.
And there should be a couple of them.
It should be.
Right?
Yeah.
It should be a couple of them.
All these Dave Chappelle's, he's late 40s.
Mm-hmm.
All the Eddie Griffin's. 50 something.
Think about all that talent. And
where are they now? Where is the? And I know some funny dudes. I feel like Hollywood stopped paying attention, or they stopped. Like, for example, if you think about it, all the guys we're talking about, the generation of talents, were a lot of them were birthed and exposed by Wayans Brothers.
True.
By Keenan Ivy Wayans.
Mm-hmm.
By Ice Cube.
Yep.
Ice Cube put on Chris Tucker. He put on Mike Epps.
Mm-hmm.
He put on Cat Williams.
Yep. Yep.
He put on, and with the Martin Show, the Tracy Morgans.
But they all come from that same class.
Yeah.
They're all from that 50-year-old class.
Now, like, all these guys are between 50 and 55.
Like, even like a Bill Bellamy.
Yeah.
It's still, you know, probably a year or two off of Cedric the Entertainer.
Right.
In terms of age.
Yeah.
Right, in terms of Mike Epps.
So the next group of people.
It just disappears.
I think because they can't be movie stars we can't be movie stars because those movies have disappeared.
Which goes back to my DVD theory.
Because someone like, I see Chris Tucker and I see a DC Young Fly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the thing. I don't know if DC Young Fly can do, he's funny, super funny.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing great with 85 South Show and mm-hmm. he did great on the Wild and Out Show. Can he do a Rush Hour?
But here's what's so important. This is a beautiful conversation. And this is all of the thoughts that I had just watching this movie is because all of those guys got a chance to get better.
Mm-hmm.
You know this from playing college football,
right?
If you don't get reps in practice, mm-hmm. right? Like, you can't get on the field.
Right.
If you don't get reps in practice, you can't get better, which means you can't get on the field, mm-hmm. which means that you can't,
thrive.
Have a tape to maybe be able to get drafted to the league, right?
Exactly.
So if you look at all of these movies that Martin did and Chris Tucker did and all of these other, from low budget to big budget, they had an opportunity to grow and get better as actors mm-hmm. because they continue to have opportunities to kind of work, right? So if no movies are being made, a DC Young Fly can't evolve to where he is now. Kevin Hart was like maybe the last one through the door.
Yeah.
From like Paper Soldiers to mm-hmm. like that bit little piece and like 40-year-old Virgin.
Soul Plane.
To Soul Plane. So he's getting opportunities to get better as an actor to ultimately get to the point where he is now.
Right.
But right now it's like there is no runway. There's no on-ramp
and
for all that creative
talent.
For
comedic movie stars.
Mm-hmm.
I had a meeting with somebody last week and he said that TV and comedy is thriving,
mm-hmm.
doing their thing. But movie and comedy isn't.
Yeah.
Even with white people, white and black
mm-hmm.
Comedies aren't doing well.
Yeah.
Aren't even being made. So a lot of times, the DC Young Fly probably would have gotten his own movie already
mm-hmm.
if black comedy movies were being made.
Yeah.
The Desi Bankses and Dorito Browns,
all of these guys.
Yeah. So we've had that. I want to call them generational talents as well.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to see them in the movies first to see if they're generational talents, because these movies have to work. Chris Tucker wasn't. I don't think he was even 25 yet when he did Friday.
I talked to a buddy of mine who's an exec at BET, like BET Plus. And I was like, man, if you guys would just, like, you know, like how the old Hollywood studios used to sign actors,
mm-hmm.
right? So, you know, like, everybody knows Eddie Murphy's famous, you know, 10-picture deal.
$10 million a picture deal.
That he did with Paramount, mm-hmm. right? Like, if you would sign these guys.
Paramount or Disney?
Paramount.
Oh.
So, like, his like the first, like, all of those early movies, Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh, you're talking about Paramount then?
Paramount Pictures, yeah. Oh. Eddie signed a deal with Paramount.
Oh, okay,
that was his
yeah.
first deal. Like, they locked him up for, like, you know, it, like, now by the time he got to the end of it, he started doing Norbit and shit like that.
Yeah.
Just try to get out, but that's beside the point. Like, if BET or one of these studios, Tubi, somebody decides, like, listen, we're going to invest in this talent, and we're not going to force them to hit a home run at their first at-bat.
Right.
Right? We're going to put them with directors and writers and innovators. Like, I think in, like, 4 years, you could have this,
this definitely class. We definitely going to have it.
Of people.
And I feel like that's where I come in. Oh, even with, over the last 6 years with my content, it hasn't been movies or TV shows. It's been sketches and on social media sketches. But I feel like the response has been the same.
Yeah.
When it comes to the stuff, I'm very influenced by the Martins and the Jamie Foxes and the Eddie Murphys and the Richard Pryor. So you see my content, it kind of brings people back to that.
100%.
You know what I'm saying? So, and that's what I try to do. Now I just got to get to the point where I'm making these films.
Yeah.
And bring that black comedy, hood good comedy back.
People love you, know you for it.
I appreciate it, man. And that's the goal. So that's what we, and I feel like I agree with you on why that movie stopped being made. You know what I'm saying? But that we got to find a way, even if it's, my goal was to become a filmmaker and have my films be debuted and premiered and screened all through the country in movie theaters. But that was shit years ago when I went to college 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I wanted to learn how to make films so I could be in the theaters. Now, 20 years later, the theaters are like a dying breed. Still so living, but it's dying.
It's like from two movie lovers.
Yeah.
That part is hard. Right? Like, you know.
So now I feel like I have only streaming the Netflix is going straight to Max, going straight to Stars. As an option. Now.
Because what's weird is because Hollywood, in a way, still makes its stars on the silver screen. Right? Despite the fact that, like, theaters or, you know, movies or, but stars are still made in movies in a way that they're not really made on TV. Right? I give you an example. Like, Idris Elba, right? Star of The Wire, but it wasn't until he started doing movies that he became, this motherfucker might be 007 one day.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, you know.
He's the British Denzel.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
With streaming, there's so much stuff. It's easy for a great series to get lost.
To get lost.
A great
1 hour and 20 minute film.
To just get lost.
When this came out? It came out in 2018?
Because it's just a thumbnail, right? And then, again, applauding all content creators, but some of the shit is hit and miss.
Yeah.
Like, I've clicked on some shit and been like, okay, like, you know, this is a one black fist, a two black fist, I'm glad you made it or whatever. So it's interesting. So, like, as I was watching, like, taking it back to, you know, Nothing to Lose, I just found myself missing the era.
Yeah.
You know, the movie is what it is, right?
Right.
Like, you know, like, I got some MVPs. I got, you know, we're going to do that or whatever. But as I was watching it, you know, watching Martin Cook and thinking about the films, I started thinking about the other films that we're going to cover. And then, like, I just ran out of movies. Like, at a certain point, it was just like, damn.
Did we run out?
Yeah.
It's going to take us a while to run out.
It's going
to
take us
a lot of movies.
It's a lot of movies. And there's still a lot of movies that were made. But then we get into that. Like, eventually we'll get to the point where we'll be like, Rush Hour? Are we doing Rush Hour?
Yeah.
Or, you know, we'll get to the point where we'll be like, Ride Along? Like, are we doing Ride Along? Right? Like, and we'll have to make those debates because these quote unquote true blockbusters. After the 90s, and I don't know when it starts to dry up, but it starts to dry up a little bit.
5 to 7 years of the 2000s.
Yeah.
Maybe even before that, 2005, 2007. Mm-hmm. Eesh.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I mean, Nothing to Lose was a good film. I dug it. I know we didn't go all the way through as far as talk about every scene, which I'm stopping to do. I'm not going to do that no more.
Yeah.
It was a good film, and I loved how they organically, I feel, brought these two characters together to kind of find some respect there.
Yeah.
Because you might think it's unrealistic for the guy to end up, the guy tried to rob a dude and then they end up being friends within 30 hours later.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on what they go through. Imagine being robbed by a guy with no gun, no bullets in his gun.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just trying to scare you, really. So you realize, okay, he's not a killer.
Yeah.
He's a thief and a loser, but he's not a killer. I don't like him, though.
Right.
But I done drove all the way out here to Arizona, and I don't have no money to get back for gas because I threw my wallet out and my phone.
Mm-hmm.
So now I can't call anybody.
Yeah.
And he has a couple dollars. And so they find themselves in the pickle. He finds himself in the pickle and almost relying on him to get back.
At that time, Martin is his only friend in the world.
At that time. Yeah.
You know, like at that particular time, when we talked about, you talked about it earlier, you described it well, how his whole life had been turned upside down. At that point, Martin's character, as flawed as he is his only friend. And their conversation is like two differing friends would have.
And that's why I like the film. I like the writing too. It was like he ends up being the guy he confides in.
They have perspective.
Right.
I would have done this. I would have done that.
Yeah.
You know, when Tim Robbins' character starts to kind of like assert himself a little bit, like when he does the accidental robbery at the gas station, and the Martin kind of big him up, like, okay,
I see you.
Right, you know.
I am B.
Yeah. So it's a great road comedy. Mm-hmm. And the vast majority of the movie is them on the road.
On the road.
Road comedy.
Figuring it out,
you know, trying to get back.
Not knowingly becoming friends.
On accident.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And then he realizes through his venting that I'm going to rob.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to rob my boss.
Yeah. And of course, Martin is all into it.
Yeah, how much you think you can get? Mm-hmm. What? I'm in.
Let's get it.
You know what I'm saying?
Let's get it.
And so then they come across some real bank robbers or some real thieves, some real jackers and burglars. That are basically trying to compete with them about
our turf. Yeah.
And then it gets into a whole wild and crazy ride where they follow them. They follow them to the heist. The bad guys follow Tim Robbins and Martin to the heist and basically intercept the bread. So they actually
At the hotel.
And it's like
I'd have smashed Rebecca Gayheart.
Would you have?
I would have smashed. I mean, at that point he didn't know. That,
true.
At he that point, that. He thought of his wife.
But at that point, here's the thing. Some people feel like when you get your heart broken, let's ask the family. Like when you are faithful to your mate, whether you're a woman or a man, you're faithful to your mate and you find out your mate cheats on you. Of course, you're angry and it's anger to the point where you're mad and now you're about to be like eye for an eye.
Mm-hmm.
Or a box for a box, a mattress for a mattress. or you just say you might want to go get even by smashing somebody else, but you really don't want that in the first place. He don't want to smash another woman.
And
he's just upset that his wife is smashing somebody else. He don't want to get even.
And you know that smash wasn't his style.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. Like it wasn't like she was hella aggressive.
Uh-huh.
She was on some young girl shit.
Yeah.
Which is what he wasn't, right?
Put the music on.
Yeah.
Some hip hop shit low key.
Mm-hmm.
And then a little strip tease.
Mm-hmm.
That ain't what he was used to.
That's even like if he was a young, unmarried man, he might have like found a way to get out of that.
Yeah.
Because that just wasn't his speed.
Right.
He's
square.
Yeah. I mean, for those that haven't watched it, the big reveal is that it wasn't his wife.
It wasn't his wife.
Smash, and it was her sister.
And imagine having your sister that looked just like your wife.
Mm-hmm.
Your sister-in-law, the same red hair.
Yeah.
They sister. They probably are 2 years apart.
She's a scumbag, the sister.
But listen, let's get to this. And the husband or the boyfriend or whatever.
Yeah.
I wish you would. I know exactly where you're going with this, man. So you got your sister coming in town. Your big sister gives you the key because they're going to be at work. So you can come to their house and you're going to smash your boyfriend in their bed.
In their bed. The disrespect.
The disrespect, bro.
The disrespect.
That's a big ass house.
Yes.
I know they got a guest room.
So many other. Obviously, where were you going to sleep?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, the four of y'all wasn't going to be in this bed.
Right.
You had a guest room. Even if you was gonna smash on the couch.
That's the only thing I wish in the writing they would have switched up. Yeah. They could have, because I don't see the sister doing that. Here's the thing. Mm-hmm. If I go, if me and my wife go to her sister's house, mm-hmm. and she's like, hey, we're staying the weekend, but mm-hmm. they're not here yet. She gave me the key to go in. And we, as soon as we get back, you know, me and my wife, when we road trip, by the time we get mm-hmm. to wherever we're going, we ready to get it cracking.
Yeah.
Yeah, something about road trip, do mm-hmm. something for us.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That so time. I want to knock her down. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to knock her down in her sister's bed where she sleeps with her husband.
We're not going to climb all the way up the stairs. Nah. And fuck in the same spot of the bed.
The baby's
with that baby's
the sheets ain't clean.
Yeah.
The guest room sheets are clean.
Yeah.
Now saying that what they should have did was he should have heard some moaning upstairs mm-hmm. and he went upstairs mm-hmm. and he passed his own master bedroom
yeah.
and he saw his wife still mm-hmm. in the guest room smashing. In his mind mm-hmm. in somewhere in the scene where he came to her mm-hmm. you know, on the phone, he was like, hey, I saw you.
Yeah.
What you mean? You saw me. What? I saw you with my boss.
Mm-hmm.
I saw you with PB in the guest bedroom. So I guess you wanted to not be too much of a scumbag by not smashing him in our bed.
Yeah.
So you took him to the guest bedroom.
Right.
That can make sense. You're like, why would I go to the guest bedroom? Yeah. That's my sister.
Yeah.
Hence them in the guest bedroom. They were our guests.
Right.
But the fact that the sister was in the bed, I don't see that happening.
Yeah. I mean, like
unless it's a one bedroom house, a one bedroom apartment.
I mean, we don't come from that world. Like, you know, we gotta talk to some of our white brothers and sisters.
Yeah,
maybe that's
the entitlement.
Thing.
Maybe that's the well, you know, I'm your guest, so I guess I can sleep in the master bedroom.
I mean, dude, yeah, we always fucking her.
we always travel the country to our friend's yeah. house and then fucking their in their master bedroom.
Nobody fucks in a guest room.
No like, way. Like, what are you doing? Nah, yeah. That's funny.
Yeah,
so all in all, he found out that his wife the whole movie starts, the drama starts when he finds out his mm-hmm. wife cheated on him
yep.
with his boss, and now his life is over.
Mm-hmm.
So at the last 20 minutes of the film,
yeah,
he realizes that his wife didn't cheat on him.
Mm-hmm.
And in
between that time, they go in, they execute the heist.
He goes back to
according to plan.
The corporate building where he works
yeah,
at.
Yeah. And then has this moment where he takes the mask off and, you know, looks in the camera.
He's so angry with his boss.
So angry.
He can't, his ego and his ego is so bruised that he wants to let you, yeah, I'm the one that stole from you. I'm mm-hmm. the one that robbed you. At first they had masks on so they can, you know, hide their identity.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense, of course. Yep. The cameras up everywhere. He's flipping the camera off, even though he got the same business suit on he had on mm-hmm. the day before. So of course, even if he had a mask on,
yeah.
you still know
it's the same
fucking
guy.
It's smoking. It's Mr. Bean. It's you, bro.
right.
But
Nick Bean.
Nick Bean. for movie purposes, that ski mask was going to help him.
Yeah.
Not tell people who he was.
Yeah.
And then he eventually took the mask off because he got frustrated
mm-hmm.
and he was basically showing.
He needed him to know.
I did this to you
on some Mr. Big shit. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Like, yeah.
Which under the circumstances, I understand and probably was his plan all along. Right? Like, you know, I think that like maybe like when he saw like the dick statue
mm-hmm.
and it was just a, like, you know, like I need you to know that like I didn't let you get away. With
you smashed my
smashing
wife?
My wife.
But this is what happens when you smash my
I
wife.
I did that.
Yeah.
Like, I, you know, I'm not a punk, you know, da 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 da. And ultimately, so then after that, they go back to the hotel, they count the money, the real robbers show up. Nick doesn't fuck Rebecca Gayhart, calls yeah. home, finds out it wasn't. Now they're in a jam. And
because now he realizes all the stuff I just did to the company
mm-hmm.
and to my boss is for naught because. Yeah. My boss is innocent.
Right. Now he's got to try to return the money.
Mm-hmm.
And then ultimately, Martin's character does him a solid. He doesn't realize this, erases the tape, you
yep.
know, saves this man's life. And then ultimately, Nick tries to do him a favor, showing up at the barbecue and saying, like, you know, I got a job for you.
Yeah.
I got a role for you. You know,
mm-hmm.
credits roll him. Right.
And mm-hmm. shout out to my sister, man, and her best friend, Linda Smith. They in the background dancing. That's
yeah.
them.
In the park?
The girls dancing in the background. Hey, so real shout out to my sister, Jairi, man.
Yeah.
She was a superstar before I was, man. She was mm-hmm. acting before I was, man. She's the, if you watch the end credits or the last scenes at the park where they're yeah. having barbecue and you see two little teenage girls in the background dancing,
that's doing them.
Like a little dance. My sister has like a green jumpsuit on.
That's her?
Yeah.
All right, I'm rewatching.
Yeah, yeah.
I wish you could have told me.
Uh-huh. For sure. All
right, so let's get to some awards real quick.
All right, let's do it, man.
Who's the MVP of Nothing to Lose?
MVP of Nothing to Lose is... Ooh, PB.
You think so?
It's a heavy reach.
Yeah.
It's a hot take, but I'm trying to be creative in this one because he's the reason why Tim Robbins was in that part of town to get jacked by Martin in the first place.
Yeah.
Or it got to be PB or it got to be the wife. Because they're the engine that got this story going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's my take.
I think it's very easy to say Martin.
Mm-hmm.
Because to everything that you talked about, yeah, this movie could have been Tim Robbins and Adam Sandler, or Tim Robbins and Chris Farley, or Tim Robbins, any of that SNL, you know what I mean, crew. Martin really makes this movie.
Mm-hmm.
There's a movie, it's one of my guilty pleasures. Really bad movie, but I really love it. And I watch it like every year. It's a movie called House Guests with Phil Hartman and Sinbad, right? The movie is hella corny, but it's one of those like every time I came home after school and, you know, turned on Cinemax or cable, it was on. So I watched it a lot. This movie would have been, like that movie would have been so much better if Martin was in it. House Guests is not a blockbuster.
Right.
Even though it's the same setup.
Yes, man.
The same kind of setup as all of these movies. So I think that I'm still going to go with Martin as the MVP.
Oh, I understand.
Because the only reason why we're even talking about this movie and the laundry list of movies that we've seen and we love is because Martin was in it, which makes it a blockbuster. So so Martin gets my vote.
I get it, and that's definitely the obvious one.
Mm-hmm.
But and I agree, you know what I'm saying? He's so black, and he's such a huge pillar in the black community, the black culture. That him in the movie, if he wasn't House Guest, it'd be a blockbuster too.
Yep.
Now I feel like there's other movies that are it's still a coin flip because you have to talk about it. This is the first time we ever questioned the movie being a blockbuster or not.
Yeah.
And some people, what do you guys think? Do y'all think that that Nothing to Lose? A lot of even people who love Martin probably haven't even seen this movie.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is because it is a mixture. It's a mixed film.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like it's to me it's equivalent to Money Talks, but I love the film. I think Tim Robbins did better than you did not give him credit for it, but I think he did his thing in this too.
I love Tim Robbins in this.
Yeah, he did.
I love Tim Robbins in damn near everything I see him in.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's a really and he does that real kind of pensive, soft spoken role very well.
He's like 6'5", 6'6".
Yeah, like you know what I'm saying? It was just to me, it was like it had like shades of Shawshank Redemption. Even though this movie was not nearly as good as Shawshank Redemption.
Right, of course.
But like just Tim Robbins is just always good like that.
Uh-huh.
Like he's always good like that.
You know who, maybe because it's a stature, but and Tim Robbins is great.
Mm-hmm.
But what if Vince Vaughn was his character?
Then it's
even funnier,
it's
bro.
It's funnier.
Chris, Vince Vaughn and Martin Lawrence, that's, you laughing already. Yeah, that was, it would have been, no disrespect to Tim Robbins,
but
I think he did a great job.
But them jaw-jacking at each other.
Oh, my gosh. And the shit that Vince Vaughn would come up with.
Yeah.
Man. But yeah, let's continue.
Because it's interesting. Like if you look at Martin, right? Like, you know, so Martin's early career is like all black. Do the Right Thing, House Party, Talking Dirty After Dark, House Party 2, Boomerang, You So Crazy, Bad Boys, A Thin Line. Mm-hmm. Then we have Nothing to Lose.
Mm-hmm.
Then he does Life. And then there's Blue Streak, Big Mama's House, What's the Worst That Could Happen, Black Knight, National Security, you know, Open Season, Wild Hogs, like, you know.
Yeah.
It gets very mainstream.
It gets very goofy after that. I'm going to keep it 100.
Yeah. I mean, he works every year.
But yeah,
he literally has a film that comes out almost once a year.
I forgot about Wild Hogs
for the entire 2000s.
What's the worst that can happen? That's Danny DeVito, right?
Wild Hogs.
No. The worst that can happen. Danny DeVito.
So that's the one that we were talking about where he wakes up as a they have like a switcheroo.
What's the worst that could happen? Yeah.
Yeah,
Wild, Danny DeVito, right? Yeah.
Wild Hawks is John Travolta, Tim Allen, William H. Macy. Like,
now here's
this
the thing.
Is not a blackbuster.
Here's the thing. I don't care how black Martin is. Because it's so white?
Yeah.
Nah.
That can't be it. Right? It'll be a case-by-case basis.
It's a case-by-case
situation.
Because if
you're like, yeah, man, we're going to watch Wild Hogs, I'll be like, huh?
Blackbuster?
Blackbuster?
That got to be an episode.
What we doing our special episode.
9,017.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Spinoff joints.
Right.
Who's your LVP?
Ooh, LVP. LVP. The daughter.
His little girl.
Martin's daughter. He could have just had one child.
That would have been perfect.
Shorty Duwop. Yeah.
You know
what I'm saying?
Who played his son
on the show. Right.
You know,
Shorty Duwop.
He was perfect. For me, my LVP was the laser security system.
Okay.
Go ahead. Worst,
because even when it was on, they still went through.
Niggas was just walking through.
Fuck out of here!
That laser, it was all show. Like that was the worst.
Is it? It was worse. The laser security or the Maxwell Man security that walked to the front of the building and they stuck behind them.
Yeah. Oh and man,
that's all you need to do.
Yeah, security was hella lax. At that spot, right?
He's unlocking the door at the bottom and doesn't see him right in front of him.
Yeah. That was easiest heist ever. Any overacting award?
Overacting. Nah.
Everybody.
Martin. But Martin's, that's his style.
Martin is always.
That's his style.
Maybe John C. McGinley, the white goon.
You think so?
I mean, he was good.
He was good.
Like, if I have to give some... Martin is the obvious choice because Martin is always over the top.
Yeah.
But Martin, it's funny. It's why we're there. So, you know, it's not over the top. But, yeah, I mean, he always is going to have a shot to get the award.
Yeah, yeah. But what about Brother Esposito when he was like...
Yeah.
Yeah, baby. Come on now from in front of the car. Come on, baby. Yeah. I'm nitpicking at this point because I didn't have a problem with it, but I did notice it as I watched it. I was like, okay, he's laying on his hood, old school nigga talk.
And
you know what I'm
saying? The thing is, it goes back to, you're right. It goes back to what we were saying about these actors having time to get them reps in, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I always remember Giancarlo as being a good actor.
Right.
But even then, something that he did in that role in Nothing to Lose helped him further down the line. Uh-huh. You know, he had an opportunity. Now we get to see him. He's a super established actor.
Right.
But it's just like, yep. But he was goon number one.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah.
And
he just got over a smidget.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh.
Right. Like, you know.
Yeah. He said, where you from? He said, London. Me too.
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get to some fists. Nothing to lose.
Ooh.
Nothing to lose. 1 to 5 fists. Where does this rank?
1 to 5 fists. Nothing to lose. It gets a strong 3.
Strong 3 for you?
3 fists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing to Lose gets 2.
Ooh.
2. And the reason being is for everything that we kind of talked about at the earlier part of the pod, which is like, I'm still not 100% convinced that it's a blackbuster.
Mm.
And with it being a question mark on whether it is, and we had a good legit debate about that, right? Mm-hmm. And ultimately we kind of decided that it was, but it like kind of like skin of its teeth. Right, like you're gonna have to write an essay on graduation day to walk, kind of situation, right?
Right.
So for that, like, it gets a 2, and it's not a knock on it because it's not bad.
Ooh, that's below average, but it was funny.
It was funny.
It was a good story. It was a cool little. I feel like how the goons caught on to him was realistic.
Yeah.
They were just driving down the street and they see. I thought it was weird to see Martin's with a shotgun out in the open.
Yeah, that's a white man directed that.
Yeah, yeah. That's so it. He's, he's playing with the shotgun.
At the gas station.
It should be like he had it on the side. He was trying to hide it.
Yeah.
But they happen to peek and see.
Yeah. No, they, he was just standing there with it.
Yeah, so, yeah. But outside of that.
That's a nitpick.
It was, it's a nitpick, and they organically found these two guys and think, oh, these guys are going to rob stores on our strip. Let's get these dudes.
I'm going to right now, but as we approach the 50th episode, what I'm going to do is I want to go back and remember what I gave threes to and then determine if I think Nothing to Lose is as good as anything that I gave a three to. And then I reserve the right to bump it up to three based upon company. I don't remember what I've given threes to.
Yeah.
And like the last two that I gave was New Jersey Drive, which the East Coast was not feeling us for that. And I this movie is actually better than New Jersey Drive. So I just like, my scale is all fucked up right now.
It is.
I got to figure out like what it is.
Right. And speaking of New Jersey Drive, bro.
Yeah.
I saw a comment I didn't respond to. I saw a comment though, trying to explain to me like the history of that time where they were robbing cars, and it was supposed to be like some political or some rebellion towards police brutality and shit like that, and that they were stealing cars to renegade and rebel against the police. I'm like, bro, shut up, my nigga. Do a picket line or a picket fence. Don't steal someone's hard earned car, some innocent person's car,
to protest because you got a problem
with, because the police don't got nothing to do with this person.
Yeah.
This woman is a nurse.
Yeah.
There's probably a single mom that is driving this Saturn to work every day, and you just rob the Saturn and take it because you mad at the police.
Yeah.
Come on, bro. If that's why y'all did it, I understand hood shit. I'm from the hood. I get it. But understand, I'm also from the shit, and I get it, and it's stupid.
It evidenced.
It was dumb.
It's the evidence of why the movie is a little bit flawed, because if it was a part of something bigger, the movie did not convey that.
Right.
Right. Like, you know, like if it was attached to something bigger, like, you know, our West Coast bias, but like when we do hood gang movies or whatever, everybody understands what's happening. They're fighting over territory.
Yeah.
They're fighting over turf.
Right.
This guy, that guy's wearing red, this guy's wearing blue. So even if you're from another part of the country, the movie helps you understand why that guy just shot at that guy.
Right.
Right.
It's a bigger picture.
It's a bigger picture.
Even if it's even with Menace, it was no Bloods and Crips really, but it was like,
but you understood why they was beefing.
And
right?
and stop doing this hood shit because the hunt is on and you are the prey.
We still have no idea why they were stealing cars. Now, a lot of the guys in the comments were like, that was our culture. I get it. Yeah. I believe it. The movie just didn't.
I'm not mad at them stealing cars.
No.
I'm just the storyline, the character. Yeah. I didn't care nothing about the nigga. He didn't have no personality. He looked after his sister a little bit. You know what I'm saying? So I would respect him for that. But like, he had a good mom at the crib.
Yeah. It was just unseasoned. Was an unseasoned.
Yeah.
You know, just needed
it's
some,
different.
Needed and, some more Lowry's on it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it just was an unseasoned movie. Was,
yeah. Right.
And I get it. And you know, for the non-silly comments, I understand, like a lot of people from that part of the country, like, that's their favorite movie. Like, they love that movie.
I loved it, too, when I was a kid.
Yeah. But as an adult, like,
as a filmmaker, I wasn't a filmmaker
or a
writer back then. But from a writer's point of view, and you look at, like, character development and, like, the consistency of a character, like, it didn't make sense.
Yeah.
The nigga start crying when he finally got to jail and his mom, him and his mom had a real heart to heart for the first time in the movie. And he's crying. He says, I feel like I let you down. And she said, no, you didn't let me down.
Yeah.
Nigga, it's you for sure let her down.
It's like me making a movie like with me and my niggas every day instead of going to school, like we break into Costco. Like every day. And everybody goes to jail, but we just can't stop breaking into the Costco.
I gotta keep getting the motherfucking.
Yeah, man. I just like to get in there, man.
Trail mix, man. I know we went on the tangent and started talking about New Jersey Drive again, but this was the Nothing to Lose podcast episode.
That's great, man.
Starring Tim Robbins and Martin Lawrence. I had a great time with this one. It was interesting because it is a coin flip. What y'all think? Blackbuster or not? I think it's a blackbuster. This off the strength of Martin Lawrence being the co-lead.
Yeah.
So I let me know what your thoughts are.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had a great point too. So
I think it's case by case.
It's case by case for sure.
Man.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm gonna be thinking about Kevin Hart's movies.
Yeah.
For you know.
Yeah.
So I'm no longer hot take tone. I said what I needed to say. So okay. I'm just a warm take tone.
Okay, warm take tone.
I'm you know.
Okay.
The fact that we talked it through, you talked me off the ledge. You're a great therapist.
I talked the temperature down.
Yeah, talk the temperature down.
Okay, a little
right?
bit. Okay.
So I'm just signing off. Warm take.
Warm tank tone.
Warm's kind of like, I feel like I need to pause. Like warm tank. Right?
Pause indeed.
Right. Like I'd much rather, like I'd be hot take, or I'd be cold take, but warm feels tank, a little like,
yeah,
a little soft. Like,
Yeah. It's all good. It's all love. I was going to let it ride.
Play my flute.
You know what I'm saying? Play the flute.
Oh,
hey,
man.
This is our episode of Blackbusters, man. I'm your host, Big Jai, along with my co-host.
Warm take.
A warm take for now. Pause. Warm take tone. And we'll see y'all next time, man. Jump in the comments, like, subscribe, and all that good stuff, man. Share. Let me know what y'all think about Nothing to Lose. Peace. We out. Pew to the max.
Blackbusters. What's up, everybody? It's your boy Tone, one half of the best black movie review podcast in the world. In the world, Craig. This episode of the Blackbusters podcast is brought to you by Amazon Prime. Prime is more than just free shipping. Prime brings you closer to the things you care about today. Through shopping, streaming, and savings. For example, did you know that you can listen to your favorite podcasts, like ours, through Amazon Music? Yup. You can also watch your favorite movies, like the ones we review on Blackbusters on Amazon Prime Video. Yup. But it doesn't stop there. You can use Prime to get more out of your interests. From purchasing behind-the-scenes books about your favorite movies, to listening to soundtracks of your favorite films. Yup, yup, and yup. Whatever you're into, or just getting into, Prime can help you get closer to it. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to sign up. From movies and music to passions and podcasts, it's on Prime.